curated to encourage leaders at all levels to be their best selves and to bring a fresh, curious perspective to today's issues in business and culture. Our goal is to equip listeners with the resources to always move forward.
Welcome to the Always Forward Leadership Podcast. I'm Carla Solnes, and I am here with Ron Kitchens. And Ron, how are you doing today?
I am awesome.
And that is great to hear because it is snowy here in Michigan.
It only for like the next 5 months.
Right, right. But you know, when it comes this early and this fast and this hard, we all either love it or are planning a travel to get to someplace warm. So I'm glad that you're still feeling awesome. I'm looking at possible places in Florida or Mexico to travel in the next couple of months.
Absolutely. You're going to Charleston, you know, soon?
Absolutely. Yeah, Charleston is coming up here quick. We have our big conference in Charleston. Really excited for that. But I feel like by February, I'm going to have the itch for warmth again.
Apparently, all of the Midwest either ends up in Florida or the Carolinas on the beach. So in those months. So
yes.
We're not alone.
No. You know, Ron, I'm really excited about today's episode. We told the listening audience, we promised the listening audience that we would do a session strictly devoted to all of the questions that come in. And we try to weave those questions in as we record episodes of the podcast here, there, and everywhere. But we have way more questions that have come in recently based on a few of the episodes that we recorded. And we wanted to just have one episode where we answered, or you answered, I should say, all of the questions that have come in from the listening audience. So we have compiled the list of questions, and are you ready to answer some of your viewing audiences?
Sure, I'd love to.
Okay, perfect. So we are going to start. We had a great question come in from Alejandro, and he said, you know, Ron, I've been reading your book, Uniquely You, and I feel like it's awesome. One of the things you changed my perspective on is being in an environment that I can be the CEO of my own responsibilities, you know, as you've put it in the book. He lives in Chicago and wants to find leaders that are not just hiring from a resume, but also from character, integrity, and talent. Where would you suggest that an individual, you know, in this case, it's Alejandro, but other leaders, where would you suggest they begin as they are really looking to find leaders to work for, in his case in Chicago, but for others around the world, how do they find leaders to link up with that are not just hiring off of a resume?
So I think the quickest place to identify those is best lists. So whether it's Outside Magazine, who we've been on a number of times, or Inc. Magazine, or the Best Places to Work group, which is done by Corp. And there's a number of those that are places that are the best place to work. So, and they all measure employee engagement. So it's not the richest place to work. It's not the place that makes the most profit. It's not the place that has, you know, the worst benefits. It's the best place to work from the employee's perspective. So first off, I would begin to go to those events that they have. And nearly all of them have events. And meet people that are there, because that it shows you who your tribe is. It's also looking for people who are learning at the same time you're learning. So Chicago Ideas Fest is an incredible, or Ideas Week is an incredible group that brings in really good thought leaders. And, you know, from the world famous to people that you probably have never heard of. And embedding yourself there. Not just learn from the people who are speaking, but learn from the people in the audience. You know, we've also have a former teammate, Damon Allison, who's in the Chicago area, who is senior leader and recruiter for Ziegler Auto Group. And if, you know, if you have any passion around that, Damon is one of the most incredible leader mentors who really sets people on fire. And I'd reach out to Damon as well.
Awesome. So I really like this next question, Ron, because we get a lot of questions about what economic development is and what its impact is on people in poverty. So I'm going to read the question And I know one of your taglines has always been and will always be the greatest force for change is a job. So this question is about how the work that we're doing is really impacting that poverty cycle. So I'm going to read the question. It comes in from a listener named Jen, and she said that she works with a group in her community called the Together Initiative, and it's a group of churches, community leaders, social service providers that are really working together for a common good. And she's interested in learning just a little bit more about the model of creating businesses and providing jobs for those in poverty. And can you possibly provide a summary of information on how that's happening here, not only at Southwest Michigan First, but with many of our community partners here in the Southwest Michigan region?
Well, and, you know, we get to work with 350 or so communities, cities, states, countries, regions all over North America in a given year. And so we get great insight on what they're doing, what works, what doesn't work. But, you know, fundamentally, for me, it goes back to three things. It's, you know, I grew up in poverty. You know, neither of my parents finished the eighth grade. My father was illiterate because of the form of dyslexia that he had and cost him his life. He was killed in an industrial accident. And I knew growing up that the people who had what I wanted all had one thing in common. They had jobs. And so it's always been, I can't remember a time in my life that I didn't understand that my goal was to get and keep jobs. Then it wasn't until I was successful in business that I got to create jobs that I really realized what I was put on earth for. And so jobs are critically important, but you know, this question kind of takes me to the analogy of we've all heard that a rising tide lifts all boats. Most of us have said it. If you're listening to this, you probably said that. It's not true. It's just not true. I want you to think of a boat on a river where the tide's rising and the boat is tied on four corners to the dock. So it's in a slip, tied on four corners. Three of the ropes have plenty of elasticity to them. They're long enough. They hold the boat perfectly. The boat rises. Everything is fine. One of those ropes is too short. It doesn't have any elasticity to it. So what happens? A corner of that boat starts going under the water. And as the water rises, the boat sinks. So we know that this high tide lifts all boats is not true. A high tide lifts all boats if all the corners of that boat have the ability to rise at the same time. They may rise at a different rate. There may be a better view from one corner to the other on that boat, but you got to have everybody rising, which means you have to get economic development has to be a group function. Now, we got very lucky and had dinner with Jim Collins, who wrote Good to Great many years ago. And I asked him, I said, you know, you've written a book about how companies are great. And he wrote a monograph about how not-for-profits could be great. But what does it take for communities to be great? And he sat back for a minute and said, oh, that's easy. If you just focus on business, you can be prosperous, but you can never be great. To be great, you have to focus on business, not-for-profit, faith-based, local government, and what? You're whispering at me.
Education.
There we go, education. Thanks. And if you don't do all of those, your boat, the corner of the boat's going to go under. Now, the reality is the community probably won't go under immediately, or not all the community, because the business companies, they'll cut the ropes and they'll take their boat and they'll sail it to somewhere else. And that's when communities start losing jobs because they've lost capacity to grow jobs. So Jen is incredibly right. You've got to bring people together. Not everybody gets the same voice because not everybody's an expert on the same things. But everyone needs to know that they serve an important capacity. And in our world, that's jobs. And those are jobs created by the private sector because those are the primary jobs. They're not spinoff government or social service.
That was an excellent answer, Ron. And I am really excited to hear your answer to this next question because I know you're going to have some some good advice for a listener named Praveen. And I'm really excited to hear your response. I think you're going to have some good insights and little nuggets of wisdom for this individual. So they asked and said, you know, they wanted to personally thank you first and foremost for making a positive impact on their life as they read the book Uniquely You. But they do have a question. And in their entrepreneurial journey that they're going through, they are experiencing more days that are bad than good. And when they were reflecting, they said, I think it's how any business is built on the bedrock of failure. However, when I see a fellow partner or an entrepreneur who gets started but quits in their journey after only a year or so, they personally feel bad for them and lose steam in their own motivation and hustle too. Have you had any such experiences, and specifically experiences where lack of growth and unmotivated people around you has had an effect on you? And how have you overcome that?
So we've, at Southwest Michigan First, been intimately involved in the last 15 years with probably nearly 250 startups, some of which we have done. And our team has, you know, funded the program, built it, staffed it, taken it to market, some of which we've served as advisors for or investors in. And every project, every one of them has the valley of death. Every one of them feels like this sucks at some point. Either you start to run out of money, you start to run out of energy, you're not hitting the milestones. The voice in the back of your head tells you you're not smart enough, you're not fast enough. Who do you think you are to do this? You can't be great. Great startup entrepreneurs are you know, Steve Jobs and, you know, Walt Disney and people that we know from their wildest successes. And so everyone has that. So there's a couple of things that we always advise on and in the projects that I do. And I spend a lot of time on entrepreneurial projects, is we know up front what our milestones are. But we also know up front the scary parts, when they're going to come. And you got to embrace the suck. You have to embrace the scary. If you know it's coming, you don't fear it. It's just like knowing when you go camping, you better take rain stuff, because I have never been camping when it didn't rain. Never been camping when it didn't rain. Not a big camper.
That's probably why.
Yeah. But the fact of the matter is, you know that the ground's going to be hard. But if you get there and the ground's hard and you go, oh, well, what am I doing? What am I thinking? The ground's hard. Yeah, that's what camping's like. So we've got to plan and know these things are hard. You know, we have a friend who just started a pretty intensive MBA program. He was asking me about, you know, what to expect. And you know, I said, the loneliness and guilt will be your first two barriers, that you're smart enough and the academic stuff will challenge you and the teamwork around, you know, looking at case studies and debating those. But you're going to feel guilty first for being away from your family. And who are you to do this? And why didn't, and, you know, your children are going to be, you know, misfits because you missed 6 weekends, you know, in their early years away from them. We know that's not true, but it doesn't keep our minds from telling us that. And then the loneliness of you're going to be up at 2 o'clock in the morning studying and reading, and everybody else is going to be in bed, and they're going to get up in the morning and they're going to go do something fun, and you're not going to be part of it. So you've got to know that's happening. But you also have to know, how are you going to celebrate with your family when you succeed in this? And if you plan that out, if you just take a day or two to plan out this valley of death, then it's really not scary. You just go, oh, thank God, we're finally here. Now I know exactly what to do. I can handle this, and I got a map to get through it because I've thought this through.
Absolutely. I 100% agree with everything that you said. And I also think just finding people, it is incredibly hard if you're around people that you feel like are unmotivated. And that we've talked a lot on the podcast about finding people that give you joy, and that you leave those interactions with them and you just feel a sense of relief and energy to keep going. And if those people aren't in your life right now around you, you have to go find them and kind of build that personal board for yourself, because having energy in this type of a battle is critical.
Absolutely critical. And you gotta, and be transparent with your spouse, your significant other, your best friend, your mom, whoever your true north point is. And we should all have a North Star. We should all have somebody who we can go back to and say, here's how I'm feeling. This is where it hurts. So they can go, yeah, remember it's supposed to. But also remember why you're doing it. Now, at some point, don't be a damn fool. If the horse is dead, first thing you do is get off it. But if you've planned out everything, if you know what that's supposed to look like, you see that pretty quickly. And we've had businesses that you and I have started together that have been wildly successful, far beyond what we could ever imagine. But we've had some of them that we built to a point that we looked and went, we can't build this any farther efficiently and effectively. So we've sold the companies and moved them out. We've shut down things. We've merged them into other operations. We found joint ventures that we could merge them into. So you don't have to commit to, you know, a 10-year run, but you do have to commit to understanding your own milestones and delivering and driving towards those and having people around you who have been successful. Don't go ask somebody who's failed. This whole thing of, you know, great entrepreneurs have failed. You got to find somebody who's failed a bunch of time. Wrong. It's not true. Only failures say that a lot. I don't care who told you that. It's wrong. Now, you might get somebody who has experience, but if somebody's a chronic failure, only thing you're going to learn from them is chronic failing. So surround yourself with people who win and who want more than anything else for you to personally win and to know who they are. And if you find that they change their perspective, then you need to change horses.
So, Ron, we have time for this one last question before we wrap up today. And if you're sitting out in the listening audience and you have additional questions, Ron is always available to answer those questions. You can just email them in. But this last question comes from a person who really asked to remain anonymous. But the question is that they have been listening to the podcast. They've went through some leadership programs. They follow your blog. They're a manager at a local government agency. And currently, as we sit here today, all of the programs that they are working on are being considered for elimination in either the federal, state, or local community budgets. And those programs that they're working in really serve the most vulnerable population in their community. And because of that, they're in a difficult season of their leadership because they're needing to effectively lead a staff during a time when not only are the programs that they're working on, but also the livelihood of those staff members and whether or not they're going to have jobs is all in flux. How can they keep positivity flowing and passion going as at the forefront of the teams that they lead while keeping in mind that this is adding a lot of stress to the individuals on those teams?
So I've thought about this question a lot. Honesty and vulnerability are the first two things. So everyone has, all the employees in this case, all have a perception of what's going on. So the first thing you have to do is ensure that everyone has the same information. And you have to acknowledge, hey, we're at risk. This sucks. And as the point leader, I am committed to you to share what needs to be shared. I'm not going to share gossip with you. I'm not going to wring my hands with you because we still have a job to do. It's also important to let for everyone to who feels comfortable to be vulnerable about what the change means to them and what those risks are. Now, the managers, you know, is going, if it continues and it's real as he says, and I don't know if it's a man or a woman, as the person tells us, then you're going to start losing people on the team. So as a point leader, you know, our belief here is that we want people to have the job of their dreams. We hope that's with us. But if it's not, we still want them to have the job of their dreams. And that means helping them leave sometimes and being that great advocate. So there are times like the human nature says, oh, this person's like a rat jumping off the ship. No, they're not. There's somebody who has a family to take care of and a life to take care of and a car payment and light bills. And so you've got to acknowledge the humanity of the stress. But you've also got to bring people back to the mission that I'm hoping no one's working there just because it's a job. That they're there to serve people, serve the most vulnerable. So they've got to start reminding themselves, here's who we're serving, and begin to celebrate success. Celebrate success. That's the thing. You know, humans, as much as we worry about our muscles and our stomachs and our comfort from the cold or the heat, the thing that we worry the least about that has the biggest impact on our performance is our brains and the way the chemicals change in our brains. And I'm not a neuroscientist. There's lots of research out there. But in times of stress, you make dumb decisions. And you make dumb decisions like, you know, auto accidents go up dramatically. And, you know, early in my career, I'm still in college, I managed a warehouse of building materials. And we had two truck drivers angrily quit. And my boss came and said, shut down all the forklifts for a few hours and have everybody doing work by hand. And I said, why? And he said, because this is the most dangerous time we have. And those are the most dangerous tools we have because people, the anxiety of what went on and all that causes people to make mistakes. And if you're making a mistake with 5,000 pounds of materials over your head on a forklift, people can die. And so this guy was brilliant in knowing how to mitigate that. But the other side of that is when you know the stress is there, do the little things. They don't have to be big things. It, you know, go buy a dozen apples, slice them up in a jar of peanut butter, and lay them out at 10 o'clock just so people know, hey, here's a little something to get you through. I care about. You know, we love the term around here, lanyap, which just means a little something extra. And so, you know, we know when there's a stressful time, there's liable to be a bran muffin, or never a bran muffin, but going to be a muffin show up on your desk, or there's going to be a hot sauce bottle to spice things up, or just these cute little things that don't cost much, but that we can all do together. And, you know, we all remember, you know, when we were in elementary school that in, you know, the most stressful times were, you know, the spelling test. And what you get after the spelling test, you got a little mini candy bar. And it was the teacher's way of creating this excitement and reward. But it's also a way of changing your brain chemistry, a way of taking the negative stress out and popping in those good cortisol. And so we've got to do that in our lives and our teams. And this is the time that managers go from being managers to being leaders. So it is hard, but if you don't get your troops through this, you know, it's more damage than just loss of income. We're at 3.3% unemployment where we live. There's other jobs to be had, but the damage to the human psyche of that vulnerability and not feeling safe is one of those things that's really hard to cure. So focus on that. Focus on the mission. And just make sure people know you love them. And leaders out there, do not be afraid to say, I love you. Not creepy, you know, Cupid baby in a diaper with a bow and arrow love, but agape. Agape love is the love of groups loving each other and the grace that you extend with that. And our friend Joel Manby has written an incredible book on those kind of business love languages. And he describes those seven languages. Start talking about that together. That what people crave most is knowing that they're in it with the group and that they're going to be taken care of together. So just go take care of each other.
Well, Ron, that was another great answer. And that concludes our episode, or the time that we have for the episode today. We still have many more questions, so I'm sure we'll have another question and Ron answer session coming up sometime next year in 2020. So in the meantime, if you have questions, you can go ahead and send those in. And we look forward to another great conversation with you, Ron, next week.
We'll see you next week.
Thanks for joining us. We hope today's conversation inspired you to keep moving forward on your leadership journey. To connect with Ron, you can tweet him at Ron Kitchens or send him a message via ronkitchens.com. If you are listening via iTunes, please leave a review. It really helps us connect to you, grow our impact, and keep moving always forward.